Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You obviously want Ten Hag to stay. Do you think he will stay? Do you think they'll keep him or let him go?
I think we'll have a new manager next season.
I'm not sure you understand how much I hate Arsenal.
I think we do, Flav.
I hate Arsenal as much as I love Tottenham.
Someone like Conor Gallagher as well. Probably one of the only few men in this world I'd kiss.
When you keep talking about net spend or what you buy or what you sell, your wage bill's in that as well.
Like, we sat on this in 2021 and you said they're the worst run club in the country, and I agree with you.
We may go to Wolves and drop a few points, that's fine, but I'm not worried about going to Etihad.
Do they know what they're doing, the owners, in terms of sort of running a football club?
I'm just a Chelsea fan, so I hope so.
That's why you're...
I mean, I'm like...
I know they've put themselves in it. Oh, my God! Oh!
Hi all, and welcome to the Overlap Fan Debate, sponsored by Skybet, and we're going to get fans from up and down the country to give their views over the next hour. So where are we starting?
We're starting, I think, with the title race, aren't we?
Okay. Well, it's not Man United we're starting with, then. Who are we starting with? Come on, you must want to start. You're champions.
Yeah.
Come on, Big Steve. Make your point. Make your case for City winning the title again.
Yeah, no. Listen, we've not been playing too well, but we're getting the job done. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people saying, are they going to do it? The performances aren't the same level as last year. We're watching Arsenal scoring a lot of goals and that, but City just have that habit where coming towards the end of the season, Pep Guardiola seems to start that rhythm. And it's all about the rhythm for me. When I watch City week in, week out, I can see when they've got that rhythm and they seem to get that togetherness, and then the fans start pulling together and that. And it's all down to Sunday for me. It's all down to Sunday. We haven't got a great record at Anfield, but there's no excuses. With the champions.
Did you get nervous in the run-ins? You know, like, I'm looking at like a Liverpool fan, I can imagine Arsenal right now, you're checking each other's results, but you're there that often, you 9 times out of 10 get the job done. Do you still go through it the way...
Makes me ill.
Does it?
Really bad. And I'm not, that's no
joke.
You
don't look too good.
Yeah. it's all them trophies weighing me down.
What part makes you ill, though?
No, because it's relentless, because I'm at the... I've been sort of pushed to the front of the Manchester City fan community, so I'm sort of there at the front. So if we take a loss, they're on me. You know, the pressure, are you going to win Sunday? If you lose Sunday? And then I start overthinking it myself, because I'm there week in, week out. I'm in Europe. I'm at the club some days working. I'm live and breathe it. So I literally feel sometimes like I'm part of the setup. And I remember the season we had to win like 14 games on the trot, and we won it at Brighton. And I came out of the ground, and we all had these great plans of going to celebrate the title. I just sat on a bench with a can of Coke and thought, thank God, that's over.
It wasn't you that threw the beer at me, was it?
No, but I remember that. No.
Out of order, that was.
It was out of order, yeah. I don't think that was City fans, it was Brighton fans, that must have been.
It wasn't.
do you think who are you most worried about? Are you worried about Arsenal? Liverpool and City have had a massive rivalry for years, normally going head-to-head for the big trophies. Are you just worried about Liverpool? Do you see Arsenal being a problem for you?
I said it on the first overlap. I said at the beginning of the season, I thought Liverpool would be the one. I think it's because we've gone toe-to-toe for that long. And it's like, you know, you're looking at Liverpool and you think, they're losing, I'm not saying anything. And then bang, they've won 2-1. Klopp's fist pumping the cop again. You're thinking, God, not again. Then it's over to us. Then we win. You think, right, let's have a breather. Then they win. With Arsenal last year, I knew in my head that they didn't have it. And they were telling me, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I was the one that stood outside the ground and said, there's blood in the water, there's a big blue shark behind you, and walked off, planting the seed, you know what I mean? It's like we're rattled and all that. But at the end of the day, they are different Arsenal. They've added Declan Rice. They've got to have learnt from last season for me. I think they were a little bit naive near the end. I think they were going up against teams they were expecting to blow over. They were finding themselves 2-0 down, chasing the game. The crowd at the Emirates were getting all up and down. Whereas City, we go 2-0 down at home now. Nobody's forcing it, you know what I mean? We trust the manager, we trust the team, but Declan Rice has been massive for them. Yeah. They're blowing teams away. It's just whether they can get over the line. I don't think they can.
Yeah. Abby, the game at the weekend, what are your thoughts?
I'm worried about it, to be honest, but you just feel like at Anfield will be all right. That's the thing. But because Klopp's leaving, it just feels like there's a sense around us now. And I know us Liverpool fans, everyone says it, like we can romanticise things, but the idea of being able to win the league when he's going. I don't mind if the Carabao Cup, if I'm saying it right, is the last trophy that we win with him, because we'll still have a parade, we'll still celebrate it, we'll still build him his statue. I don't mind that, but obviously I want to win more, but we'll still be so grateful for him. I think it's just the romanticised Liverpool way of looking at it, that it just, it feels as though it's ours because we're winning in so many different ways.
Have you ever, I mean, I haven't, but I just want to ask you, have you ever, do you believe at any stage of the season Liverpool would win the league? I feel as if Liverpool have got to beat City at the weekend, certainly for me, to sit there and go, I think Liverpool are going to win the league. And I think I will believe that if Liverpool go 4 points clear with 10 games to go.
Yeah, it's definitely this game. This is definitely the game that I've been looking towards. There hasn't been a time this season where I've gone, we're going to win it. I've probably sang it at the match, top of the league and all that, but I haven't actually thought that it's going to happen. And I think I even said before, I do still think that City will get it, but it's probably just trauma from the amount of times that we've just scraped it by 1 point, standing there again and again, and Anfield just knowing that it's not going to happen. And I just, if we win this game on the weekend, I'll start to believe, I'll change my answer, but I don't know, I am nervous for it, but it just feels like being at Anfield, we'll be fine, you know, it's difficult.
What do you think is going to happen at the week? What do you think? I think City are going to beat you. I want Liverpool to win. I want the league to be opened up. I think City are going to win on Sunday. I think he's going to come, and I think he's just going to put a right job in.
Is, you know better than me how, you know, there's been different City teams. Has there been better City teams than this? I don't know. You know, you go back to when, you know, David Silva was playing in and Aguero was in, and they never came and won. I just think the Anfield crowd, I think Liverpool's team as well, you're going to see who's actually available, who can play. I think missing the goalkeeper is a big miss, even though, you know, the young lad's been brilliant. But Pep does have a problem there at Anfield. I think, has he only been there with City? Did he come? I don't think he did come with Barcelona or Bayern Munich, to be fair. But the only game you've won was without a crowd, wasn't it? Under Pep in probably 6 or 7 years. City's record in general, forget Pep and this team, even Mancini's teams, Pellegrini's, your record at Anfield's not great. I mean, is that in your head as a supporter? Yeah. And do you think it gets into the heads of the players as well?
Yeah, it's about, if you let that crowd get a grip of you, you can feel it. You know, I can look at City, me, and I can think some of these are rattled here by the crowd. They've let the crowd. I think City's got to get the ball and control the play. We've got to make that game at our pace. Kevin De Bruyne's got to get plenty of touches on it. And I think we've got to calm it down. There's a little section in the Manchester derby on Sunday after United had scored where the players were trying to force it. And Bernardo Silva, he got a message off Pep and he went round, he was going, calm down. And then we all took a breath and then we got back on our game. I think the Anfield crowd can knock us sometimes off that. And I feel like on Sunday, we've got to dictate the play. We've got to be patient. I don't think we have to force it. I think we can just play our game. And if we can nick it, we can nick it. But the crowd, for me, I've sensed it. I've thought we're comfortable, we're winning. And then within 15 minutes, something's happened. The place has gone upside down. And then next minute, we're two down. And it's like, we can't afford to let that happen Sunday.
I always say that about Anfield. There's no other ground that you feel like you're all right. All of a sudden, it can just go bang.
Yeah.
And it's something hits you. And you think, okay, how do we look? We lost two goals there. Yeah. But I think you've got to win. I think at Anfield, you've got to win it in the first half.
Yeah.
I always thought when we played at Anfield, we always had to damage them in the first half and make them realise that we were a real threat. I think if you go through that first half and they grow in the game and grow and grow, I think you've got a problem. But I think if you hit them hurt in that first half, you've got. I think you win Sunday. I don't know why. I just think Liverpool at the moment is still obviously reeling with injuries. They're scrambling through games like you wouldn't believe at the moment. I mean, they are literally scruffy as hell.
But there's momentum.
They've got momentum, but I just think Sunday could be too much for them.
I don't know. I just think with the crowd, and I think with, when we think you're talking about injuries, don't get me wrong, but when you look at actually Liverpool's starting 11, which I think would not be far off first choice, I would say. Would you think on Sunday, if you know Salah's back, Nunes is back, Szoboszlai's back, you actually then look at the team on paper and you go, it's probably Trent and the keeper who are not there. And we've known the keeper's not going to be there for a long time. It's not like it's this big shock. So,
yeah, especially when you've got Mo coming back. I mean, he's just travelled to Prague as well. So you're just thinking, we should be all right here. You are looking at the starting 11. The bench looks poor, to be honest. I mean, the kid. This is the thing. I've got full faith in the kids now, though. I mean, Dan's has got a concussion, which is a bit of a blow, because I imagined he'd play in Prague today. But I don't know. I just feel like the crowd getting behind them is definitely the main.
We'll be all right. Abby will be absolutely
fine.
That's
the thing. I just think we're going to be fine because of the ground. But that's probably just because I'm going to be there, dead angry. But I feel like since Klopp's announced he's going, the atmosphere has just gone even more. Normally, it takes like something to happen in the match for us to then go, oh, we need to get behind us now. But we've all constantly got this thing of Klopp's going every game. You're ticking down his last game at Anfield. You've got to make sure that they're all as exciting, and we've got to make sure we're behind them so we can win as much as possible. And I don't think City are going to beat us.
Would you take a draw now? Would you take a draw?
No.
No, definitely not.
No. Well, Clive, I want to bring you in there because you're going to be in a similar situation in a couple of weeks against Manchester City. And where do you feel with this sort of being in between these two teams? And there was something I looked at and we did the show on after your game, Monday Night Football, that they have this Opta predictor. I don't know where they get the numbers from, but Arsenal have like a 15% chance of winning the league. I don't know how they compute it, but I think he's a right in there. Not just because of the points, because the form that you're in, the way you're playing.
It's how we're playing. I think it's really interesting listening to you guys. I think there's a narrative of City, what they're doing, repeating the treble, where they end up. And we're all sort of used to them winning. So we get comfortable with it and we can see their drive. Then you've got obviously a narrative of Liverpool and what they're doing. But I think with Arsenal, I think people are missing our narrative. People are looking at, why not look at Odegaard and think, he might have been a bit upset we didn't win the league last year. And the way he's playing is showing that. Why not look at Saliba and think, he missed the last 11 games last season. He's fit now. We lost defensive stability last year. When we played Liverpool and played City this year, have you guys watched these games and you feel the crowd? Have you felt that we've looked inferior in those games? Because we've managed to box people away from getting near our goal. So we've got a way of playing that's quite sustainable. Now, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I think we're in danger of missing that these guys want to write their own story. And their own story may not be as naturally to us to lean towards that Klopp going and what we used to see. But they want to write their own story and write it for the first time. And so when you look at this group with an average age, which is still the third youngest in the league, I ask you honestly, we're on the up escalator and we can be better. We're better last than last year. This year we're much better. And we're going to be better next year. We're going to be better the year after. All the contracts are signed. The organisation, we look really, really good and connected. And so the story of connection to the players, the club, the fans, we're just like ignoring it because there are bigger narratives that we're used to sitting around. So that's my
feeling. So you're disappointed then that people aren't talking about you?
No, actually, I used to get really disappointed. I used to get like, oh my God, why aren't people talking about us? But actually, in the end, if you just keep winning in a style and show people what you're actually doing, eventually people have to turn and have a look. Have a look how many shots they conceded, how many goals they scored. Look at the XG difference in the table. This isn't like a...
We did all this Monday, you know?
Yeah, this isn't...
But I think you're the best team. I mean, I said it last week, you're the best team at the moment. You've got the performance levels defensively and attacking. Yeah. You're playing better than City. You're playing better than Liverpool. I think you're in a better position than you were last year in the sense that I've got more confidence this year that you're not going to go and do what you did because with Declan Rice there, Saliba there, obviously a year on, I think you're dangerous. And I think you're really dangerous. And I think if you just sit there. Yeah. Just sit on the shoulders and let them fight between themselves if you can. Let the narrative be about them. Because I think if you just sit there with 4 or 5 games to go and staying at the performance levels that you're at, you're definitely the best team at the moment. It's whether you've hit... I wanted you to hit your form a month or so ago, but now I'm asking, have you hit the form too early? Because you're actually in an unbelievable period. But we'll find out. We'll find out in the next few weeks.
I think you can go... There's very few teams. I think Liverpool have been one of those in the past where you think they could actually go to City and do some. I'm not saying win, but... I think you could go there and definitely get a result. Even last year, you went there, but I think everyone was watching it thinking, you just fancied City just to...
You'd gone then. But I think this year, I think you have to go to City and win.
Yeah, and I think... I remember last year, I was getting excited like everybody else. The first 14 games, win 12, draw 1, lose 1. Everyone's excited. It's new. It's new for us as fans. 20 years since we've been here. And you know what? City fans messaged me and said, mate, Clive, relax, mate. This is a course. Don't go too soon. And it stuck in my mind that did, and he was dead right. We blew up towards the end, and defensively, we were just destabilised. This year, he's focused a lot more on what we do off the ball. and make sure we're stable, and then on the ball, things are starting to go in. And so I'm a lot more confident that we are more mature to do better. But sometimes I'm trying to box it off my mind and say, I want us to win, but if we don't win, are we progressing? And I think we definitely are.
Hands up, we're asking here who's going to... What do you think? Who do we all think who'll win the league? City, put your hands up for City.
I really hope it's City, for obvious reasons.
We were right, though, weren't we?
On a personal level, I think you're a fantastic human being. But
how patronising is that?
Isn't it better that no one's talking about Arsenal?
Honestly, I used to get so upset with you two. I used to get so upset that we
weren't... You're not tired, you're fighting the corner, mate.
That we weren't being looked at. But I thought, you know, it's not important. What is important is how we're doing it.
I'm worried as a Spurs fan about Arsenal, even in their position. And I've seen the stats that gave me some comfort, that only 13%. But it really doesn't matter, because a victory against Manchester City puts Arsenal, unfortunately, in a really good position. And whereas last year I thought it was going to implode, and brought in a lot to what you said, Gary, that was always going to be City. To me, there's just something that's just nagging at the back. They do look incredible, defensively especially. And I'm just praying for City every week now.
Who do you think will win it? You said Arsenal at the start of the season. Yeah, I said City.
I'm going to stay with that. I mean, to be fair, the likely favourite is City, but I'm going to stick with Arsenal. But just something tells me that they've got some... I think, obviously, that team that you've got out there at the moment stays fit.
Yeah.
Then I think you'll do it.
God, Everton at home last day as well.
To be fair, you've actually got United away, haven't you?
Yeah, there's a few
Liverpool grounds. Got United away as well, I think.
Yeah. There's a few grounds that we need to go and fix.
We've got tough away games.
Yeah, but we've
got to
come to Spurs.
We've got
to
come Spurs, got to go United. But if you want to win this thing, you have to go there and beat these teams.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't think we have to beat City.
So
you need to not lose.
Tottenham, City, Wolves, Brighton, Man United. I think that'll just stop you.
I think you have to beat City because you're going to need a cushion.
The buffer.
You're going to need it, honestly. You're going to need
that's
to
what
take
points. Yeah.
I think Liverpool and City, you can't look at City and think other teams will take points off them. You two have to beat them. Honestly, you have to think that way, because if you don't go and beat them, then...
Well, if Man City don't lose points in the next sort of four or five games, your last four or five decent games, your tough ones are now, aren't they? So I think it's got to be... Hero now, hasn't it, for Arsenal?
You can't sit there and say, I don't think we have to beat City, and then expect other teams to do you a favour. That mentality to shift to become champions. When you won the championship in the past, you know, you came to Old Trafford and Overmars scored, you came to Old Trafford and Wiltord scores, you win at the big ground, and then all of a sudden everyone goes, oh. I think if you go there and draw, I'm not saying Pep will be happy with the draw, he won't be, but you know, ultimately they'll just take the fight down the road somewhere else and they'll win all the other games. They bully other teams.
Yeah, you watch a game on the weekend, obviously, and Man United not in their best moment, but they had moments. They had moments in that game. And I think City are showing a level of vulnerability in their back line they don't normally show. So if they can have moments, we can definitely have moments.
I don't know what happened to United after half an hour, because, to be fair, they looked quite...
Just went back to being United.
Yeah.
they were quite strong defensively, and they were actually... They were
strong defensively.
Carrot, they were restricting City to very few moments and good chances. So what I'd say is that's as good as it can get for United. But they were going forward. Rashford had the chance where he should have headed it in front of him.
Yeah.
Rashford had the chance where he should have played it across the goal to, I think it was McTominay was in the middle or someone. So there were three decent chances in the first half. Now, then all of a sudden, after that, they actually never went forward once, hardly. I can't remember them going forward again, so I don't know what happened to them.
The belief went, and I know people took the mickey out of us.
I don't think it was. I think their legs went.
Maybe, because they're moving around trying to get the ball back. But you know, we won the Charity Shield in the Community Shield in the summer, and people had a giggle at us celebrating. But for belief, that was really important. Really important to stand with them, feel their power, and see if we can deal with them. And that continued into the league game. That gave us confidence for Anfield. That gave us confidence for the home game. And I think what people are not realising, hold on a minute, they're not worried about these teams anymore. And we may go to Wolves and drop a few points, that's fine, but I'm not worried about going to Etihad.
Are you worried about going there, Flav? Come on, Tottenham. You're going trying to sneak into the Champions League. You're playing Manchester City, Liverpool and Arsenal in this runners. You've got a big say in where the title's going to go.
Yeah, 100%. I think there will be implications based on how Spurs perform on where the Premier League title goes. In the same way that Liverpool are going to be super motivated against Man City at a weekend, obviously North London derby, we would consider us to be the most fierce in the Premier League. Mm.
or certainly up there. And they, and despite how good Arsenal have been over the years, if we get last season, they've found it difficult to win at Tottenham. Postecoglou's system now will be able to create chances against any team. And what Spurs have struggled with recently is anyone... The best way to beat Postecoglou's Tottenham is low block counter. But the better teams will want to play more possession-based football. Arsenal, it's built into their DNA to do that. And so it'll be a fascinating game against the some of the better teams in the league, like Liverpool. That you'll see a different brand of football and a different performance and games that for a neutral will be fascinating to watch.
You're involved in the title race, but obviously you need points for yourself.
Yeah.
Would you take Postecoglou and Tottenham getting back in the Champions League if that meant Arsenal won the title?
No.
Wow. What? It's real hatred right there.
Really?
I respect it.
No, not at all. No, we'll get in the Champions League next year. That's not that.
But, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, we'll have a good chance in it. Yeah, but no, you're asking me to go for... I'm not sure you understand how much I hate Arsenal.
I think we do, Fluff.
I hate Arsenal as much as I love Tottenham. So that's...
You sound like an Everton fan.
There is...
I've put this on, so you remember when you were an Evertonian. Kidding.
I mean, but with at this stage where we are currently, I would have bitten your hand off at the start of the season. We did this, and you asked me what I was happy with Postecoglou's arrival at Spurs, and where we were 8 months ago under Conte, it's night and day. I look forward to going and watch Spurs play, and that's something...
There's not a massive difference on where you are in the league, is there?
Yeah, but it's about the nature of the performance, right? If you'd, I mean, we're probably not dissimilar. I think we're a bit further back, but we're playing exciting, interesting football, possession-based football. We want to force the way the game's going, and we're not passive in the result anymore. It has been frustrating against teams like Wolves and Villa, who came and won by playing just sensible football. It wasn't difficult to beat Spurs on that day, West Ham as well. But it will click, and it's going to take time for Postecoglou. I know
it's going to take time, I get that, but do you think Postecoglou and Tottenham can get back to challenging for trophies? You didn't win them under Pochettino, but do you think he's got the capabilities to actually get in there amongst it the way sort of Arteta and Arsenal have?
I think we're at the start of a journey. Arteta has been there, this is his fifth season, and they've spent to the tune of £600-700 million. They're about where they should be.
He knows more about Arsenal than you.
Is that not true, £700 million, about right? That's sounds
yeah, maybe,
right.
Maybe.
So you should be where you are. If you weren't, it'd be a complete failure of your position. And if you don't win it, you really probably start need to look at what's going on there. See,
I generally think we're imploding, actually. I generally do think we're imploding.
Because there isn't another 700 billion, right?
31 goals for this season so far this year.
You're very good, and it looks like a team that's been put together with 700 million.
But that's what people do. They try to put you into a box where success criteria is you have to win.
Of course you have to win.
And we were talking earlier about how you feel standing in the terraces right now compared to how you feel with Conte.
But is that the problem with Tottenham? You're never in a position where you have to win. There's always, oh, we're Tottenham, or we haven't spent this, or we've got Daniel Levy, or we haven't got this.
So
there's never that pressure on Tottenham to win.
No, you're right. And a lot of people, like I've got a mate of mine, James, he's a QPR fan, and he can't stand me moaning about Spurs. But what Spurs are in is a mini-league of seven teams, and we're bottom of that constantly. Right, we're the part of the big six, but the worst of it, statistically and based on trophies. But we need to get into a position where we think differently, operate differently. I think that Daniel Levy, although he's come under intense criticism from Tottenham fans recently, has positioned us with financial fair play in a very strong position. From this position, we'd be able to spend, and unfortunately, that's what you have to do in the Premier League, is you spend the most money, give yourself the best chance. For the first time in a long time, I think Daniel Levy is position Spurs in a way that we can maybe challenge for a league title
He's driven revenue, you mean?
Revenue driven, yeah. And don't get me wrong, like he's just literally he was building up some goodwill. People are starting to forget about what they thought about him last year. Postecoglou's changed the
ticket prices up today, hasn't he?
It's like, what are you doing? what's 6% going to do? You've got an F1 track. Beyonce's playing there every other week. You've got You've got. It's already the most expensive ticket.
She's not going to win you the league, though.
NFL as well.
She's no Harry Kane.
NFL. So you've got all of this great revenue, brilliant revenue.
When was the last time he put the tickets up? I don't know.
He froze last year, I think. But yeah, it's been gone up.
He puts them up basically most years.
It's been a bit of a jump today. There's a problem, isn't there, between Arsenal and Tottenham fans are not happy with the ticket prices I've read this morning.
Both of ours are the most expensive.
Yeah, I mean, it's London prices, right? But, hey, look, it's not something I'm going to sit here and say I welcome, but the demand is massive. And, Gary, you're in business, right? If the demand is that big, what are you going to do?
What's 6% mean in cash terms for a Tottenham ticket to go £5 off?
Well, it depends. It's a variant.
What's the cheapest ticket?
I think the season ticket, cheapest one's around £900. My mate's his season ticket has just gone up to £1,115, I think he said. And he's genuinely considering whether or not he can actually afford to go. And the club don't care. They could not care less who is in that stadium, what their affiliation is to the football club, as long as they come. And what Spurs have done in building that stadium, as incredible as it is, the sum of what made it so special for me to follow the football club and a lot of fans isn't... It's not that it's not there, it's just so different from the old White Hart Lane. And it's fine, we understand development, we understand how you have to build revenue in football and to try and be successful. But when you're not, it's kind of hard to.
Yeah, he won't be making any extra money out of that 6% because obviously the energy costs have gone up, the staff costs have gone up.
Should he swallow them?
Inflation.
He should swallow them.
So he either has to lose more. He either has to stay where they are, and means he loses more money effectively, or he just wants to stay exactly where they're currently.
How much money has he lost on Ndombele in the last five years?
Oh no, I'm just saying he'll just
purely look at his business.
He's just sending a message to the Salford fans. What's coming? The energy prices have gone up.
We have the cheapest ticket in the whole 92 clubs. Thank you.
All right, forget Salford. Luke, you're going to be competing with them.
I wish you would
for the Champions League position. I think you're 4 or 5 points ahead of them. Right now, are you confident to stay in that position?
100%, yeah. I think this season we've been amazing. The best season I've had supporting Villa. And not only because of where we are in the league, but it's the type of football that we're playing. Last time I was talking about what Emery's going to do to Villa, and he's quadrupled what I thought he'd do in my mind. We've got we're now playing possession-based football, controlling games. He's got his identity and it's just growing and growing, and we're far from the finished article, and it just feels like we're going to get better and better.
You see, from the finished article, I did a newspaper column about 6 months ago and the Villa fans slaughtered me for it, but I just feel with Villa right now is that the manager you've got's brilliant, the team you've got's brilliant. You've got to sort of hit it head on now and probably the next 18 months because you don't know what's coming down the line. Because if Emery keeps doing this at Aston Villa, would someone else, a European giant with a bigger club, come and try and take him away from you? You know, do you have that fear, or do you think he's in it for the long haul?
No, I think when I look at Emery, we all know that he's won European trophies elsewhere. And I really feel like last time he was in the league, he wasn't himself. Yeah. He didn't give a full Unai Emery performance. And I think when I hear him talking now about his determination of wanting to succeed in the Premier League, I think he wants to create like an era at Villa. And I think he feels like the club's fully behind him. You know, we've recently just invested in his La Liga team. So, you know, that shows that sort of it's basically a new contract, really, that we've backed his team that he owns in La Liga. I think it's the second division. So I feel really comfortable and safe with Emery. And I just think, the progress from Europa Conference League, Champions League, you know, we're absolutely flying, and like I said, the brand of football is brilliant. We can be controlled with our possession, but we can also be fast and direct with Watkins and Bailey on the break.
I think the brilliant thing about Villa, I think, and I'm looking at you as well there, Baz, is that there's so many teams sat here now who you think, when's it ever going to get better for us? And you think where Villa were a couple of years ago, I think you stayed up by goal line technology, not basically working for the first time ever in the Premier League. I think kept us in the Premier League a couple of years later. You're on the verge of the Champions League, so it's a brilliant sort of gives hope.
Isn't
basically
it an issue,
to everyone?
Though, because obviously the loss has come out, hasn't it? £120 million. I heard Emery not long ago saying we might have to sell Ollie Watkins to keep in. And this is the problem with the Premier League, the way it is that. And I've heard Newcastle, I've heard Eddie Howe saying we might have to lose Isaac. Well, is this what we've created now? Where
Don't say the cartel six.
We had the chat and I wasn't going to say it, but you've brought it up. So the thing is that we can talk about how great the Premier League is, but what's happening is we've got Villa, who were fantastic. You didn't mention Diaby, who's brilliant as well, by the way. Villa, who've been fantastic. Newcastle are getting there. Everton found this a few years ago. I'm sure we'll come on to that. But they get so far, and then the real say, to go any further, we've got to sell a plane.
By the way, why has all of a sudden FFP become a problem for not just like sort of Everton and Forest, but Villa, United? You know, every club is looking now at FFP, but all of a sudden, everyone seems to be on
called the independent regulator, Gary. Well, it is.
But everyone seems to be on the limit of FFP, but they've been spending billions for six, 7 years.
We've just heard Leicester. Leicester have got a points deduction if they come up. Facing two separate points.
But what's happened? I mean, seriously, what's happened? I don't.
Well, the rules have been there a long time. It's not like the rules have just started.
They've never implemented them, though. There's not a chance in the years that they put in, no club has ever failed in that time. And it's this is my opinion. Listen,
they've just got to the accounts, you think?
I think it's. I honestly think they've looked and they don't want government interference whatsoever.
So they're trying to stave off the independent.
How do we show our strength?
One of the frustrations Spurs fans had with Daniel Levy was he was talking about this regulation that was coming in at this stage. And he was saying, once this happens, we will be in a strong position. And the Spurs were going, well, that's the most boring way to approach people ever. Wait for regulation. Can't we buy Haaland or whatever it might be? And it was like, wait for regulation. So he was talking about this specific time. I don't know what has changed or the rules that might have changed. But there were signs from Daniel Levy that this was going to become a problem for a lot of clubs.
It needs changing because you can't have... again, this doesn't affect Everton. Well, it does, but I mean, I'm talking like Newcastle and Villa. You can't have a situation where these teams are building and making good sides and then going... You know, Newcastle have got... And Villa are wealthy as well. They've got money to spend. And then they're saying, you actually can't spend any money. Because
we've already written the rules.
Listen,
the rules are there, so if you break them, you're going to get punished. But in terms of football, and I always just keep it really simple, if a guy buys a football club and it's his business and his club, why can't he spend what he wants to do, as long as it doesn't put the football club
in trouble
in terms of going into administration or, you know...
In the handbook, mentioned eight times, and it's a threat. I've been doing this for 5 months now and I shouldn't have to. I should be thinking about XG and players and that. But there's a 346-page Premier League handbook and it's mentioned eight times PSR across that. And it's never, ever once mentioned in conjunction with sporting advantage.
To be fair, I mean, it's something that I've been speaking about for a long time in terms of sort of like owner funding and the rules around owner funding. So I take your point. I don't disagree with the principle that it's your business, you'll be able to put money in. As long as you've got that money and your proof of funds so that you don't go bust. Mm. But the problem with that is if you speak to, say, a Steve Parrish at Palace, he'll say, OK, that's great, Gary, I get your point, because we're up against the Saudi Arabian government, we're up against the Abu Dhabi government. They've got trillions of pounds. They could literally just go and do whatever they wanted and it would literally just become a disgrace of a league. People suggest it's become a disgrace of a league anyway because of City winning it 3 and 4 times. I do think that's related to Pep, and I know you do as well, that once Pep goes, I think it'll balance off a little bit again. He's just an absolute freak of a manager. But I do think there needs to be some controls. I don't know what it is. And the only control that I've ever been able to come to is that I think every club in the Premier League should be able to spend up to the level and amount of the top revenue-generating club. So if that top revenue-generating club is probably... Well, it's Manchester City, but I'm going to say it's Manchester United, naturally.
It's Man City, 700 and... Yeah,
it's not.
We know it's not.
Right, so Manchester United, more often than not, will be the top revenue-generating club in the league. And let's say that's 600 million. The other owners, I think, should be able to fund a spend. Right, so let's say United's wage bill's 350 million because their revenue's 650 or whatever. Other clubs should be able to spend up to that level of income so they can compete with Manchester United. But the owner would have to put the money in up front so that they know that they basically can't just run away and say, leave the club bust.
Isn't the danger, though, and it is, and there's no way around it, I don't think, without a wage cap or something, is the danger that the six are already too far, though?
But what it means, Baz, is I always say this, why Abu Dhabi, how did they pick Manchester City all those years ago? Why didn't they pick Everton as an example, who at the time were a bigger club? Yeah. I always say, if Abu Dhabi are coming to City, to Everton all those years, so you could get another owner coming into your club with money that could spend that level
of money. He had one.
Yeah, no.
They've got one.
So we've been allowed to spend them. We've been allowed to
spend. You've spent absolutely off the scale money. Should
we? We'll have to chat on Everton in a minute. Don't worry, I've got it on.
My point is,
and these are facts, Jay, by the way.
So
if
Qatar had come in at Manchester United.
Spent massive money.
But if Qatar had come in.
Hang on. Gary. Hang on, whoa, net spend FC here, by the way, back me up. Are these not net spend FC?
Hang on, this is the same Everton who, when, you know, the Premier League starting, you were part of the Big Six or the Big Five. You were voting Sky In and Sky Sports and the Premier League and all that, so everyone just votes for what how they are at the time. Bill Kenwright voted for these rules that you're now arguing against at the start of the, when these rules came in 10 years, because it suited Everton, because Everton didn't have any money.
I'm not disagreeing.
My point is, when everyone just changes their arguments, whatever situation they're in.
Well, of course, because if you're if you were outside the top six, you'd be changing.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, you're moan about the top six all the time.
That's right.
But when you were in the top five, it was fine. You were fine with leaving everyone behind.
Oh, but I'm not talking about Everton there, where we were talking about Villa and Newcastle. We're saying they've got to a stage.
And I've said I don't like the rules where you get to a certain stage and then you can't actually push on. You've got to sell a player. People are talking about Villa or Newcastle having to sell a player now to kick on.
If you speak to the Premier League owners, some of the more sensible ones, they say that what you would do is, how they say it should happen is that if a new owner came in and wanted to invest £1 billion, because you can invest in infrastructure and stadiums, so you could build, Crystal Palace could have a 50,000-seater stadium, they've currently got a 20,000-seater stadium, they'd have an extra 15, 20, 30 million a year of revenue because of their ticket sales would go up. So he says that clubs should generate revenues that basically then make you be able to spend more. Yeah. But I do think if you want to try and punch up, like Newcastle obviously do, with their ownership, Newcastle, in my opinion, should be able to spend the same money as Manchester City and Manchester United and Arsenal and Liverpool, because their owner funding model should be able to allow them to. They're at the moment, Newcastle United, and I think this is wrong, can never get, I don't think, naturally, and now the rules are tightening around you. You can never get naturally up to the levels of Manchester United or Manchester City, because how are you going to get there? You have to rebuild your whole stadium and get to 100,000, and then your revenues it's just mad. So I do think the rules need changing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Have we got this far on the overlap and not spoke about Man United?
Because we're irrelevant.
Adam, come on. Is that what it is? Yeah, Man United irrelevant.
I think the season's over for us, isn't it? Hearing about Villa fans and Tottenham fans talking about a battle for Champions League, Manchester United aren't getting Champions League football this season, I don't think. I think that's gone. FA Cup probably be gone in a few weeks if we don't turn up at Old Trafford. So then you're looking at a season which left really just for Ten Hag to prove whether he's the man or not to take us through next season.
Do you think he is?
You know, when I go through the list of potential managers that could come in, I don't feel very infused by it. Like, I go Nagelsmann, Tuchel, all right, maybe they're worthy of an interview, but I don't feel how I felt when Ten Hag was available and you go, just go and get him. So part of me kind of feels like he deserves a chance with the new structure there. But you just start to feel, have we gone too far down the line of things not working, bad results, 12 defeats in the league this season's horrible when you look at it like that.
You know, when you talk about the new structure, obviously you know a lot more about it than me, but this new structure is basically taking power away from the guy you're talking about, staying with the new structure.
I mean, I would call it supporting him rather than taking power away from him.
No, I'd call it taking power. He's basically being able to do what he wants, as I think a lot of Manchester United managers have.
But that's the problem. We didn't have anyone to step in and go, 80 million and Anthony, I'm not sure that's the right deal to be making, or someone to step into those positions. Like, even with De Gea, we should have known we were replacing De Gea 3-4 years ago. And the Onana signing, while I think he's kind of started to improve in the league, It was one there where we kind of went, who's the best keeper in Europe at the moment? Oh, he's doing well in the Champions League, let's buy him. It was never a signing that was
But wasn't he, again, well another player the manager knew? Didn't he work with him?
Exactly. So you need to take that power away from a manager. So many signings have been decided by a manager. We chop and change manager. So then when the next manager comes in, you go, well, these players aren't suited to him. There's about four different managers' players there. We have to change all of them again. We need to have a little bit more of a philosophy and a style and a structure running
through
the club.
I get exactly what you've just said there, where you're constantly changing and the club are having to spend money. But for the actual manager who's there at that time, to be able to buy the players you want, no matter what they cost, and it still be how poor it's been this season, that's a massive... So you're actually saying we should keep him with a different structure.
But I just
feel
not
like
there's
what he wants. Because what you're implementing then is longevity, where you say, if we do change the manager, OK, we've got a philosophy. But for that individual manager then, you're saying he'd be better with a different structure, but he's actually been able to buy...
I'm on about just my personal feelings is give him a chance. I do feel Ineos coming in, especially with the amount of changes they've made, when you look at they're going from top to bottom and just bringing in new players, there's new roles appearing at the club every day. I think they will eventually get to that position where they're looking at the manager and going, we need to bring in our guy, someone that fits in with what we want to do. But again, it's like Graham Potter. I'm not sure about that one. Like Thomas Tuchel, I'm not sure about that one either. So part of me feels, how many games has he won in the last 2-3 months?
But he has an identity, right? And that's what...
Ashworth.
So did Ten Hag until we drilled it out of him. I think we've damaged so many managers.
Adam, I'm interested in you saying that, because I'm absolutely like bemused, like bewildered as to how we can't play football under Ten Hag. I can't believe it, because obviously you see his football that he's played when he's been at a previous club, and he's coming at United, and the football... He actually resorted last week at City, when you look back on the game, to what Ollie did, I think, at Tottenham, or when he just sat back and played. Ollie played 5-3-2, but he just went back, right, I'm just going to get a result. He tried to get a result by any means last weekend. How have we damaged Ten Hag? I probably know the answers, but why have we damaged Ten Hag? Why can't he get a tune?
I think part of it is, look, I think you have to put responsibility on him. I think there's been a lot of games where we've had enough, despite injuries and despite all those different problems the club has, where he should have got a result. And you have to blame him for tactical decisions, substitutions, etc. And the style of play, there is no style of play. Like, what have we been doing on the training?
Why? That's the bit I don't
I think it personally comes down to just injuries and that inability to get momentum going. And then you look at the transfer issues that we've had over the years. There's still a lot we need to do. Like, we're still relying on Lindelof and stuff. Like, Lindelof was an issue 2-3 managers ago. I don't think he's a major issue, but I'm just... Luke Shaw's injured every other week. Like, we're still relying on players that were issues a few managers ago. So I start to feel a little bit more sympathy for him when you go through the team and you're like, well, Casemiro, we bought him a year ago. He's already looks like we need to get rid of him. Like, you look around the team and there's one or two players you could argue should
What would he have to do to stay for you?
Win games, you know.
No, but...
And also
I mean,
just
from now to the end of
you know
the
what's
season.
A strange one? I'm normally at Old Trafford. So when I'm at Old Trafford and I'm in the Stretford end and everyone around me is singing, it feels like, oh, it's a good atmosphere, this. But I remember I watched a game on the TV. I can't remember what game it was. But I remember thinking, this is flat. And you can hear it more on the television. And I remember thinking, if you're in the Ineos guys and you stood in the crowd and these lot ain't up for it here, they're not against the manager, but they're also not believing in what's going on at the minute. And I think that goes across to the team. I think that's spread around a crowd. And I think they will start... The more defeats happen, he will start
I think the
to,
problem they've got is that you said before about the list of names. I don't think it is a time where, obviously, Liverpool are looking for a manager, Barcelona and Bayern Munich, so three of the biggest clubs in Europe are currently probably got people speaking to agents, setting up deals or meetings. And Manchester United are in that position where they're probably not sure with the manager, do we or don't we? And you could get left behind. So it's... I think they've got to make a decision really quickly.
I don't get the impression, though, that like Jim Ratcliffe or Dave Brailsford or Dan Ashworth are the type of people that won't be doing their jobs now in terms of planning and seeing what's available for a new manager. I'm not saying they've made the decision. I can't believe they wouldn't now be sounding out and looking and thinking what happens. I think for me, for Ten Hag, when you say what's critical, I always remember two games under David Moyes and under Ollie where it was City and Liverpool. We've got Liverpool at home twice in the space of, I think, 3 weeks. I think those games can either be your friend or they could be your massive enemy, because you know what it's like. If you're losing at home against Liverpool, away at Liverpool's bad, but you've only got a couple of thousand United fans in the corner. You've got 73,000 United fans in that stadium against Liverpool twice. And if Liverpool come and do us in the cup with 7,000 probably fans there, because you get a lot more allocation. I do think those games are defining. I think we beat Liverpool.
Season's over as well.
Yeah, the season's over. So I think we beat Liverpool in the cup. The atmosphere will be electric if we beat Liverpool in the cup. It'll be amazing. And then I think that obviously if we do all right in the league against Liverpool, I'm not saying we will, it's a big ask this. I think they are games that would then potentially give us that impetus to the rest of the season and would give Ten Hag a bit of a lift. I think if we lose against Liverpool twice, I think you can imagine the atmosphere, what it's going to be like. I mean, the season's over with a month to go. And I just think that could be really, as you say, it could be dead. Mm. And I think that could be really bad in terms of just perception and just feeling. And
I think he is on trial for his job now between now and the end of the season. I think
he is.
But obviously, I'm an optimist and I like to be optimistic. Every year, I think we're going to win the league. And I do have some sense of optimism with the direction these guys are going in. It's things they should be doing, yeah. It's kind of like that Chris Rock stand-up bit about getting praise for stuff you're supposed to do. Like, they're supposed to do the stuff anyway, but just them going and meeting people, yeah, that's their job. Like, but them going to meet the staff and say, look, we just want to win games and trying to change the direction of the club. And whether Ten Hag's the manager that maybe came in too early to benefit from those changes or not, I don't know. But it does feel like, especially with they're just bringing in all these new roles and trying to change things with the football club, move towards a direction of, let's focus on winning. It does fill me with a little bit of optimism, but I fear that Ten Hag's probably not going to benefit from it.
I was going to say that, to finish, you obviously want Ten Hag to stay. Do you think he will stay? Do you think they'll keep him or let him go?
I think we'll have a new manager next season, unfortunately.
I mean, I'd
unfortunately.
Like...
Unfortunately?
I like him, you know. I liked him last season as well. I think he deserves a lot more credit for what he did last season. And I think we always have to go backwards to go forward. And not that every manager's the same, but there's other managers that have kind of failed before they've succeeded. And for Manchester United to get where we want to, I think we've got to go through the painful process of getting rid of a lot of different players that maybe some of them we like or whatever, but you have to get rid of some of these players and move on. And when you go from the back, I don't want to do it because we'll be here all week, but when you go from the back to the front, we need a player in every position. That's not happening in one transfer window. So we're going to have to be patient as well. I think.
It, what's going to happen is that Ten Hag gets sat by United, Liverpool will appoint him and he'll win the league for Liverpool.
Right, we've got Harry from the Traitors here, Chelsea fan. So we're going to talk about teams who are massively underachieving.
I was going to say, can we skip that bit?
Come on, talk to us about Chelsea. I mean, it's an absolute mess.
Talk to us about Traitors. Well done, by the way, first.
Thanks. I mean, yeah, there's not really much to say, is there, when it comes to Chelsea, but it's just like you said yourself, it's just like I'm an optimistic Chelsea-biased fan, just as anyone else, but I think the difference is with me is, like, I just believe in the club and I believe they're building something, and the pressure the players are... It's so hard to just put 100 million cap on each player and say, play here, and then they've got millions of fans that aren't even Chelsea fans that put them under this pressure to perform in one season. They've just cracked, and that's all it is the pressure that they've cracked under. But I know being there and speaking to some of them, like, they love the club and they're building something. So I'm just trusting
Who loves
that.
The club? So who loves the club out of those players, just as an interest?
So I spoke to Colwill. I know he's saying, obviously, someone like Conor Gallagher as well, and I love him too. Probably one of the only few men in this world I'd kiss, because the way he's playing now, it's like such a dark time. And the way he's up and down the pitch like a yo-yo and just trying his hardest, basically. That's what it looks like they're doing. They're just like... trying their hardest.
Mm-hmm. Matisse, what are your thoughts on it?
I'm very concerned. Very concerned.
Not
about
as optimistic as this fella here?
No, because I think, like, there can't be a pity party around Chelsea. We've spent so much money. Obviously, your tagline of the £1 billion bottle jobs went
in. It wasn't
everywhere.
Mine, it was him.
yeah, Gary's. And it was one of those situations where I agreed, but obviously it's one of those ones where it hurts to hear, because it's like, we don't have another billion to go into. What we've bought, we have to get the best out of, we have to develop. And that's one of those things where you have to question, like you said, okay, the players, they might really want to do their best, but there's a lack of balance in the recruitment. When we talk about that billion spend, we can talk about, obviously, the money spent on the midfielders, but there's been so much players that have come in that they don't even play in the squad. You've got, like, Washington and Datra Fofana, who's on loan at Burnley, and Angelo at Strasbourg. This multi-club model, we've almost tried to mimic Manchester City, who are way further on down the line in their ownership than these guys just coming in and trying to almost do too much too quickly. And I look at it and I think to myself, these players, they don't have any leadership around them. There's nobody to hang your hat on. Even a Thiago Silva is coming up to age 40 now. The manager as well
sometimes is a deer in the headlights, because he comes in and obviously he has that, I want to win in England, I want to prove people wrong in terms of sealing a deal in cup finals. And then the way that we lose that cup final, I think it was just an indictment of everything we've done wrong up until this point.
What did you feel about Pochettino after that game? A lot of Chelsea fans wanted him gone. The Chelsea fans have been chatting for Mourinho,
yeah.
I think, away at Brentford.
I wanted Pochettino in because of the predicament we've found ourselves in with all these young players. I've seen his work at Tottenham, Southampton, developing young players, improving them. And I thought, if there's anyone with Premier League experience plus developing young players and actually getting you to a good points tally in the Premier League, it's him. You know, he's been there and he's been able to do that. He's not going to get off so over the line, Premier League, Champions League, wins like that, but we're not there yet, so that's not a problem. But I think the message, I think when you're going through dark times at a football club and the fans are not on board and there's no need to trust the ownership or the directors, they've not done anything yet, they don't have the credit in the bank. The manager's words weigh very heavy, and I think he's said some things where it's almost like Chelsea fans, don't look at the Roman Abramovich era. We're not there anymore. It's like you're not really in touch with the fan base because we're not trying to say that we should be winning Premier Leagues or we should be winning Champions League. We should be even in the Champions League in terms of top four with this young squad that haven't proven anything. But we shouldn't be 11th. We shouldn't be behind, you know, Wolves. We shouldn't be 1 point ahead of Fulham, who lost Mitrovic. Everybody's got their own context. When we talk about Chelsea's injuries, 100%, it's been very difficult to find rhythm, to find chemistry, to find connections within that squad. But at the same time, we shouldn't be in mid-table. I think there's got to be a line drawn where it's like, this is embarrassing now.
Do they know what? I mean, honestly, from the outside, I think it's been mad at Chelsea in the last 18 months. Do they know what they're doing, the owners, in terms of sort of running a football club?
I'm just a Chelsea fan, so I hope so.
That's why, yes.
I mean, yeah, I'm the same as you, so I hope they know how to do their job. But again, I mean, I'm just speaking from a Chelsea fan's point of view, and it's like, our players are so young as well. Like, we've got Cole Palmer, who's only 21 years old. He's younger than me. He's already won it at Man City. But like, imagine him in all of these contracts as well, 8 years long. So it's like a team, like I say, a baby team that's in nesting, that's going to hopefully hibernate soon. And like, in the next few years, they'll be a world-class side. And just like you said, it's like you go through a dark time, but that's the time that you need the most support. And then as soon as it starts falling down around you, you need the fans especially to be the ones to stand there and be like, I'm still a Chelsea fan. It's going to work out. Something's going to click and it's going to happen. Because then as soon as you start falling down around it, then the whole club goes tits up, which is kind of happening at the minute. So it's like, yeah, I'll stand here and say, like, happily, I think it's just a bad time for us, but we'll be back.
I have to disagree personally, because I feel like we don't know these owners. We just don't know them. And we don't know their intentions with our football club. You know, you look at the ambitions of Aston Villa. They sign players, even Diaby, who's got a CV, got experience, a catalogue of work in Germany, to say, right, he's going to come in and deliver. And they've got that competition with Bailey. Every time I look at our...
We bought a World Cup winner in midfield for 100 million.
We have, but that was when the amortisation rules were there to kind of spread it over 8-9 years. Now that the Premier League and the UEFA have come in and said, no more of that, it'll be very interesting.
What do you think they are trying to do with your football club if they're not trying to show ambition? They've spent £1 billion.
So I think the money obviously placed in is fantastic, but it's where it's spent, and it's why is it a rule where we have to have only under 23s? Why is it a rule where we can't seem to bring in any experience? Well, when we started with Todd Bowie, the face of the who's no longer really running it on a day to day,
he's been quietly shifting.
He's been moved a lot. Yeah, he's been moved to the side. We were going in, like, we were interested in Ronaldo, and you're thinking, commercially, is that the reason? Like, is that why you want him? We went in for Aubameyang, Sterling, and we had Tuchel. They sacked Tuchel, and they took out a proven winner who had just gone through sanctions, had gone to two cup finals in a row, and had won a Champions League. And, of course, now his stocks are very low. People don't really, you know, fly the Tuchel flag anymore. But that guy had done incredible work for the football club. And instead of hiring a director of football, we know how important they are. You've got, you know, Tiki at City, you've got Edwards along with Klopp. Our directors that have come in from Brighton, they haven't got the experience at the top level to say, we know what we're doing at this level to bring the expectations, to bring the success back to Chelsea. The manager in Graham Potter comes in. Again, it's an experiment. We don't know what's going to happen. And my fear is with Chelsea is that they're almost trying to be ahead of the curve on everything. And there's nobody to say, yeah, I know exactly what we need to do and these are the steps that we need to take. And it just feels like constantly excuses and briefings. And I think we've hired someone that was doing commercials for Manchester United recently. And I'm just thinking, this is turning into a little bit of a drama, and it's turning into a little bit of a PR exercise. Every time something goes wrong in a result, there's a briefing, a report, we're going to sign Osimhen. No, we're not.
We're not even in the top four. We're not going to have that money. And then when we talk about financially, where are Chelsea going after spending this money? If we had won the Carabao Cup, which obviously we didn't, people are questioning will we be able to participate in the Conference League. I don't know. I'm not an accountant. I dropped out of that course in uni. Do you know what I mean? I'm a content creator.
What course
are
you on now?
I'm not on no course, but there's so much uncertainty. I don't know how I can just be calm and just say, yeah, anything goes, because we don't know what's going to happen.
Are you calm at the moment with Tavern? Newcastle looks like your director of football's moving on. There's talk about you can't spend money, you know, hasn't been as good as last season. Where are you at right now at Newcastle?
I think last season was just so special in like the grand scheme of how long we'd been kind of suffering. I know that's very subjective in terms of suffering. There's more clubs who've suffered as badly or if not worse than us. But I just feel like I'm calm, but I also understand maybe Newcastle fans who aren't necessarily calm as well. I can kind of see both sides of it at the minute. If we get some form of European football this year, considering the injuries that we've had, I know we're not the only team, but we've had significant, I think we've lost the most number of days of injuries this season. The Tonali situation, which we did not expect that to happen either. I think if we get European football, even Conference League, like I will see that personally for me as progress. That's European football two seasons in a row, which we would never have expected that. So, but then I'm kind of, obviously what Adam was saying with Man United, their season's over if you go out the FA Cup in the next week or so. We're the same as us, no? Because I'm laughing because it could be the same as us, and we've obviously got Manchester City, which is going to be exciting. So, yeah, if we go out of that and then we're just literally fighting to get European football, that's going to be a struggle. So we'll see how the club and Eddie Howe navigate that, really.
What's happened this season, has it brought back a little bit of reality about how tough it would be to, you know, one day knock Liverpool or Manchester City or Arsenal right now out the way in terms of challenge? Because I think when the money came in because of the rules FFP, I always thought at some stage it wouldn't be as easy as basically what maybe Chelsea had it originally or Manchester City did, where the rules weren't as stringent for you to be successful and be constantly in the top four.
Yeah, I'm on board with everything that everyone says. Like, why in any other business in life, well, I don't know every single business, but you can, and someone who owns a business can put their money in to extend that business, to expand it, to get the revenue. In football, you cannot do that if you are obviously certain clubs, if certain owners and things like that. So I do think it's unfair. I do understand the cap. I understand why FFP is there. I understand the premise of FFP. But I do think obviously it's a little bit unfair because, as you say, it's going to be so difficult for us now to get back to where we were last season, because obviously last season there was a lot of kind of different factors that subjected in, like Liverpool weren't at their best, Tottenham weren't at their best and things like that. So we kind of capitalised on that, but you can't do that every season. And if we can't move forward without having to sell players that we use to get to that point, then it's going to be really, really tough for us to do that. So yeah, I just think last season we were all up a height and we were all like, yes, we're going to win everything, like a league title next year.
Football fans, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's how football fans
will
are,
Eddie,
really.
Will Eddie stay beyond the summer? Will he think, is he under pressure from the fan base? Is he under pressure from the owners, you think?
I don't think he's under pressure from the fan base. I think everyone, we're just kind of, because as I say, where we were kind of just sailing. We're happy where this is progress to us. I think obviously if we go out of the FA Cup and if we do finish outside, maybe if we finish 10th, 9th, 10th, then I think there will be certain sections of the fan base who maybe are looking at the future and looking beyond that. But I think at the minute he's fine and he has proved that he's still, you know, amidst all of the negatives that have gone on this season, I still think he's doing a really good job.
Well, the manager who has gone is Roy Hodgson, Daniel. I mean, you're probably having a poor season, hence why he's made the change. I mean, was that the right decision in the end?
I think so. You know, you look at the first spell that he had with us, it came to a very amicable end. You know, it wasn't ideal the way he went out, but I think everyone knew that it was the right time. When he came back at the back end of last season, it was a stabilising effect for everybody and it meant that we stayed as a Premier League club. But I don't think anyone across the fan base really expected the club to give him another year. I think really the signal that it sent to the fan base as a collective was that we were treading water for an entire campaign. And whilst I understand it from a financial point of view, you've got Zaha leaving, you know, you want a steady hand at the wheel. I don't think you can necessarily do that for a full 12 months and keep all the fan base on board, because you do want to see not necessarily tangible progress in terms of victories and points on the board, but you want to see a direction. And, you know, bringing back a manager that, and it, age shouldn't be a defining factor, but it has to come into the conversation with Roy, someone that had left already, who was already the oldest manager in the Premier League when he did go, to get him back for another year, it just felt like the definition of standing still. And obviously things have changed now, we've got Oliver Glasner in, and hopefully, you know, that works out very well for us in the short term.
Are you the fan I speak to on Twitter?
Yes.
He's my Crystal Palace man on Twitter. We exchange views. I just heard the voice then, I thought, yeah. So anything I say in Crystal Palace has come from that man. How are you doing, okay?
Yeah, good, yeah.
Good. And what are we thinking in the first couple of games then with this the new fella in?
I'm obviously...
New system, isn't it?
I'm hugely optimistic because, I mean, I was saying before we recorded to someone else, you know, to get a manager that's won a Europa League a couple of years ago in at a club like Palace, we have to be realistic about our place in the division. To get him to come to a relegation battle at this exact point is, you know, a real coup for us. Obviously, you can't guarantee that it's going to work, but we've gone to a back three. Even though against Spurs last week, people said it was like Roy Hodgson light, but I certainly saw positives in the sense of the way that we were approaching things. I just think that fitness is a huge part of it because he wants to play a very high-pressing style. He wants people to get in opposition faces and get forward as much as possible, and that's not going to be an overnight thing. We've got a huge game coming up against Luton. We managed to get 3 points against Burnley. And I'm very optimistic that if we get a full pre-season under him, then we may well be in a very good position at the start of the next campaign.
Jamie, Luton, he's threw you in there about coming up. That's a big game. That's also a big game for you as well, the position that you find yourselves in.
Yeah.
How worried are you? I mean, when I say worry, I mean, can Luton almost enjoy a relegation fight because it was so unexpected that you'd maybe even be in this fight towards the end of the season?
I think it's safe to say that we've exceeded all expectations from externally to Luton, but I think internally, I think we're exactly where we thought we would be. I think we would have been in a dogfight, but still in it with 5-10 games to go. And ironically, probably a bit frustrated that we have left points out there this season. Villa last weekend came back to 2-2 and then just a mistake at the back post. Liverpool last minute, Arsenal last minute. There's been lots of points that we've left out there. So frustratingly, I think we probably should be in a better position up the table. We've got 3 games this week now, Palace on Saturday, then Bournemouth midweek and Forest next Saturday, which are huge games. And then the fixture list is kind to us, but I'm confident. I think we can still do it. Clearly, we don't know what's going to happen with Forest and then Everton sort of second charge, but we are right in there and I back us.
We've been talking about City, Liverpool and Arsenal playing each other, but you's Everton and Luton have got a game. That's it's at Luton, isn't it?
Yeah, so we've got Everton at home.
I mean, how pivotal do you think that'll be, Jamie? And then we'll go to you, Baz.
Yeah, so we've got five at home to go with Everton, Brentford, Forest, like 3 huge games. Palace away, Bournemouth home as well, Fulham at home on the last day. So we've got 5 home games there, and you think win all 5 or win 4, and you're probably there because you'll be on 32, 35 points, and then that's enough. So I think we'll win those home games and we'll be okay, but clearly we know how tough this league is, and Everton will be fighting, Brentford will be fighting and Forest will next Saturday as well.
How worried are you about that game, Baz? They beat you twice at Goodison in the FA Cup and the league. I mean, is that a game that you look at yourself thinking, you know, in the running in terms of staying in the division?
Yeah, obviously it's May, isn't it, that one. Everton have got to win the home games. Won 3 all season. Next time we play Goodison, it's April, and we've won 3 games, and without the points deduction, we'd be 12th. So obviously that's made a huge impact, and there's another charge coming up.
When's that coming, Baz?
April, I think. I think Forest have got theirs, and the expectation is Forest will get whacked with a big one.
What's classed as a big one now?
6-7 points, they're saying. I don't know if that's...
Would Forest not just get what... Obviously, you have been the precedent. Will they not just get what you got? 6?
Well, it'll be 6 and then... Show up. This is from Forest people. They said, I have no clue. I'm not a lawyer or whatever, but because of the spend is purely on players, they're saying it could be worse. But I have no idea. I actually find it scandalous. I don't know. Forest shouldn't be losing any points. I think points deductions is nonsense. The gastrics all over Premier League make it a void. I've said this to you. It's basically a COVID season when you start putting asterisks in for I've never seen.
What was the asterisk season or the COVID season?
Well, COVID one. No one. Right, we weren't there, were we? Go back and watch the games.
Liverpool has already won the league, but honestly, they won't let it go.
No, I'm not. I'm saying the next season was rubbish, wasn't it? You go back and look.
But Baz, what would you say the deterrent should be for clubs that breach financial rules and basically don't play to the same rules? Because if you think about it, teams that have got clubs that have gone down that have lost that £100 million and clubs that have stayed up, Everton as example, what would you say the right punishment is when you've been, and if Everton have been... Well, do you know what I mean? I'm not saying that you should be punished 6 points. No. What do you think the punishment should be?
I want to come on to that just very quickly because I love you stick with football, but I've got to... I'm disappointed with the pair of you when you had David Ornstein on because neither of you put on... I know your view, but it's wrong. no, it is. And I'll tell you why, because it isn't about players. So David Ornstein, when he was on your show, was very good, but he brought up...
Has he said what you think?
He brought up... Yeah. No, he brought up a argument that Everton sold Luca Dean to Aston Villa for 27 million. They shouldn't have spent any money. They should have just used X, Y, or Z out the under-18s. The big thing he was missing there was, and you'll know this from your own football club, is that, I mean, sell a player. So Everton sold Luca Dean for 27 million. That went in on the balance sheet. They then bought Mikhailenko and Patterson, but only 6 million went out because obviously they're paying that over, as Chelsea will contest, over a number of years. So Everton actually made 21 million. So what he said on your show was if they'd have banked it, he wouldn't have breached, which is wrong because... Obviously, if Everton go down that season because they haven't got a left back, they lose what? 60 million, is it? 70 million? They killed us. And, you know, in terms of our charge, Everton have posted, if you're doing like player trading, Everton are actually in credit for the last 5 years. We've been trending.
What was your wage bill like?
Now, the wage bill was 90%.
The wage bill was absolutely
90%.
I keep reading this, right?
Oh, hang on.
I keep reading. And it doesn't matter where your money comes from. Mm. Everton admitted over a 3-year period they were over 105 million. Is that Everton? That's, admitted that?
Yeah.
Admit. So when you keep talking about net spend or what you buy or what you sell, your wage bill's in that as well.
Like the wage bill.
No one ever mentions the wage bill.
The wage bill. We sat on this in 2021 and you said they're the worst run club in the country. And I agreed with you. If you're sitting here telling me they've been run poorly, I'll shut up right now because I'm not going to say no, we haven't. But there is mitigation with us, I feel, with us. Right, is that, yeah, the pandemic affected everyone, you know, but we've got the CEO of the Premier League saying he couldn't do his job properly because of the pandemic. But yeah, they bombed that out the way for Everton.
And Everton's COVID losses were like 50 or 100 million more
that,
than everybody else.
Right, okay, but the Premier...
Considering you haven't got the biggest stadium, you don't bring that much commercial stuff in. No, I'm being totally honest.
You're not like a United or a
Liverpool bringing commercial revenue.
What you're missing there, though, was the Premier League wrote that off. So when Burnley moaned, and Leicester ironically moaned, and they're getting done, Forest, them two were moaning about it. The Premier League said, no case to answer, until the independent regulator come along. But Everton's case, we had a war, which lost 30 million a year in sponsorship. And we're building a stadium. Now, I don't know about you. You've watched a lot of football and played. I've never seen a stadium pop up at the back post and everyone in. So I believe there should be mitigation in terms.
But I thought the new stadium spend was excluded from...
No, for 2 years, which they agreed. Now, tell me this. You build an extension, I'm your builder, and we agree. That's you can put something down and halfway through. I change the rules. Surely you'd be... If there's a 4-year project,
Just going back to it.
USM 30 million.
Was going back to it.
That wasn't for naming rights on the stadium, was it?
They paid 30 million for
naming. Listen to this sponsorship. This is hilarious, this one. What was the 30 million for?
Well, they paid 30 million a season for training ground and for Goodison and for training kit.
Yeah, and what was the 30 million they gave
and
you?
They paid
for first dibs on the naming rights.
They were going to sponsor USM for 10 years.
It was a fiddle. You know it was a fiddle.
They're going to sponsor it for 10 years. For 30 minutes. Sorry, Gary, what were you saying?
So, going back to it though, I know it's sore for Everton fans at this moment in time. I've got some sympathy, but what should the deterrent be for breach of financial rules where clubs are doing it properly and some clubs aren't doing it properly?
Okay. Right, so for me, it should be either squad reduction, so 20 players. So if you've got a squad of 25, you've got to do something with 5 players. I mean, you know, Forest would be knackered because they've got 43, haven't they? But you'd have to choose that or a transfer ban. Hit them where it hit. We had the La Liga president 2 weeks ago saying what happened to Everton would never have happened there.
The squad of 20 I don't get because, I mean, City probably worked with a squad of probably 20 anyway. That it wouldn't harm clubs that much.
Plus a bit more than, so you got to have academy.
The transfer embargo for what, for a season or for...
Depending on the...
Isn't the same thing what you're saying is transfer embargo? Well, do your own transfer embargo.
No,
don't buy the players with the money that you're having. Put you over 105 million.
Back on the Premier League, they okayed signing. So there's a nonsense going around that have been given to their journalists to put out that they said don't sign him and he did. Everton just went ahead. It's utter nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And I've got that from people.
Everton.
No. But whatever.
No, the league do have to register players to sign. So what I'm saying
is, we got Delhi. When we got Delhi,
Everton and the Premier League were working together. Because the Premier League, I don't think the Premier League really. If you're from outside the Premier League, and there's sort of you've got Man City on 115 charges, you've been docked 10 points, 10-6. Forest now, it's not actually a great look for the league. I think if we're watching this and it's Serie A or it's the Italian league and we see this every 5 or 6 years, we all look at that league and think something's not right. So this thing about like the Premier League want to get you, and I understand the independent regulator thing in terms of like trying to show a bit of strength. I agree with that. But the reason the Premier League are probably working with you is because I don't believe they actually want to. They're almost saying, come on, make sure this does almost like, let's work together.
Well, that's fine. Don't let them register a player then. What's that?
That's my point. I actually think the Premier League should have been tougher.
They should have.
They said you can't buy
again, anymore. I've got no issue. If they'd have said at the start of the stadium build.
You'd have kicked off if they'd have said don't buy a player. You've just said about Michael Enkel.
It's their rules. It's their rules. I'm saying to you, if they'd have said at the start of a stadium build, you can't put that, you can't, you know, whatever the interest, whatever, doesn't count. You either do it for the 4 years it's building, or you don't do it at all. Personally, I don't think clubs should run through 105 million, but there's only three clubs that posted a profit. Everyone plays, instead of playing it to naught, everyone plays through 105 million. No business should be losing 105 million. So I'm not arguing with you. What I'm saying is it's a 4 year reporting period. Everton went over by 19.5 million of what you'd allowed, which is still a joke, by the way, losing 5 million a year. But 19.5 million, trying to compete in the Premier League, to build a stadium, losing sponsorship.
But looking at Villa now, Villa have lost 120 million this year. Mm. I don't know what your losses were or profit last year, to be fair, but you must be now, that alone, because you can only lose 105 in three, so you're obviously 120 in one, you probably lost money last year. I know United can't spend much money this summer, unless they sell. They can't. They're rich.
Isn't Chelsea 100 million profits as well, someone was saying? It's not just 100 million in sales, it's 100 million in profits. So that's why Conor Gallagher is one who they're looking, because he's pure profit, isn't he? Yeah.
So it just, to me, every club seems to be sort of on the edge of it. But I think it's going to be a mess that in April if you get more points and great for you.
Well, I think we will. I think we'll get
and Forest
I think
get
we'll
more
get
points.
Three, because I think what they'll say is we've done you for. And that's the line, I think.
Done you for the first...
I think you'll get two.
We've been done. Well, three or two. I think Forrest may get six. That's what they might say. But see, even that, if it was in the rule book, we'd all go, I wouldn't even be sitting here arguing. If you went there, it's there, mate. You know, if you breach, it's that.
Yeah, but the whole point of it not being a rule was a deterrent. Because if you look at it and go, oh, we only get 3 points for that, or we only get 4 points for that.
What happens now then, Jake? So if I'm Villa, right, so just let's say for argument's sake, they go with 6 points. If you breach it, 6 points. If I'm Aston Villa, and go, we're like in the Champions League, Champions League. If we're in the Champions League, I'm not selling Ollie Watkins. I'll take 6 points. We'll just have to make sure we make them 6 points up. Why would you sell them?
Yeah, so, I mean, when our accounts came out, it was basically, the thing I looked at is, are we okay with that PSR? And it was like, we're okay. So going into next season, like you say, potentially we may have to sell a player. Like, we're probably looking at maybe like Jacob Ramsey, who's an academy player that we'll get the pure profit on him. And
but should you? That's not right, is it?
No, it's not right. City have been doing it for years, obviously. I mean, the reality of it is now, Chelsea are selling Conor Gallagher, you're selling Jacob Ramsey, United are selling Rashford. They're actually now, clubs are literally now selling academy players just to purely comply with FFP or sustainability. It's mad.
We'll do it with Brantwaite. It's obviously Helms are used.
Yeah.
Because he's a million and we'll get...
But it's profit and loss. They haven't spent the money on the player. It can only be 100% profit if it comes from an academy.
No, I get that. We understand why they're selling academy players.
It's just finances.
The only point is, the rules mean that the first person you're going to sell is an academy, but the whole point of it, you don't want to be having to force to sell an academy player because that's going to...
We sold Tom Cannon.
The alternative is actually it encourages clubs to actually produce better academy products because it has a financial incentive to do so. That's better for football.
But it doesn't, but then you've got clubs like Chelsea who are selling Conor Gallagher, who's one of their best players.
I'm not saying you would. I'm just saying that if they're financially more viable than buying
And that's the problem with the system. That's what we're saying. Is it's financially more viable to sell it for FFP or PSR, but that can't be right.
So you're investing in development of the players because you know that down the line they're going to be financially...
No, but the rules, like Gary said, are there to keep you... If you look at the rule book, it actually says, though, PSR is there to protect the financial position of the football club, not to do with, like, sport and stuff.
Yeah, the big problem I have with that is if you're a Championship club or a League Two club or a League One club and you produce players to raise funds to keep your club sustainable, I get it. But if you're a top club, Chelsea, Manchester United, Aston Villa, are having to sell their City, are having to sell their because academy players... Because they have to sell academy players to fuel this, what would be... It's wrong.
But it's only wrong because they're now in a situation where they have to do that. It's their own financial...
It's literally what we're doing. Literally what we're doing.
Yeah, but that's because
I'm missing the point.
They spent 200 million quid, 200 million quid on two midfield players, but they have to sell Conor Gallagher.
What he's saying is because of the club's mismanagement in the first place, which is right, but it's wrong that they're incentivising the sale of academy.
It's beneficial to the club to sell a homegrown player. It's almost like an unlevel playing field if you're a homegrown player compared to someone who they've brought in and cost money. This guy is going to get moved on quicker.
Yeah.
When that's his club. You think of Conor Gallagher now.
Yeah.
He's his club. That's where he's come through.
The
one who's actually going to be sold or maybe moved on because of the rules.
In Chelsea's situation, if it was happening at the Spurs at the moment, we wouldn't be forced to sell that academy player.
But they went and bought Enzo.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying in that. They've got themselves into that position in the first place. That's the big problem. Yeah, I totally get that. But the solution can't be easier. My point is, the academy player can't be the solution to that problem.
No.
It's got to be an equal footing with everybody else in that squad.
Right.
I get they need to sell someone. I get that. But it shouldn't be... I know they put themselves in it.
Chelsea last summer, they obviously bought Enzo before that, but they go and buy Casado, and then they go and through ego, just go and buy Lavia on the last day of the transfer window for 54 million quid. But then they have to sell Conor Gallagher like two times. Because they didn't need Lavia. I mean, he's even played a game from anyway.
I don't understand what's so frustrating about what I'm saying.
Flav, you're missing the point, though.
Am I?
What we're saying is... It shouldn't be
it's
that.
A shame.
It shouldn't be that we're in this position where
it's wrong.
Conor Gallagher has to get raised up on his soul.
It needs to change.
But how do you change something if you?
But it needs to change. There's no
because
way.
Because there's no money being invested in the player. You can't change it. It has to be this way. I'm not saying it's right.
What you're saying is
not right. It's not right that an academy player is the one that
it may not be.
It fixes the books.
What we're saying is, as a strategy, there's something that feels wrong about it. When you actually are basically to fuel a football club, you're having to produce players just to sell them, and they can never play for your club properly because actually you need to get the money in from. That's what we're saying. That as a strategy, a tactic, it just doesn't feel like football's going in the wrong direction. If that's the way in which we think it, if the top six clubs are having to sell their academy talents. If Manchester United have to sell their academy talents this summer, I would say that is, to be fair, the worst thing that I would ever possibly see at United, to see their young players produce the first team to be sold to fund the shit they brought in.
But that's
absolutely
the issue.
Especially if you don't want to sell that player.
We know that at the top, but the solution can't be that.
What's the alternative, though?
How do we bridge it, though?
I'm talking about academy players.
I completely agree with you, but my point is, as Flav said, like, you look at the business model of it, it makes sense on an economics basis. But what's the alternative if you're going to force people to profit and loss? Then obviously an academy player is 100% profit. If you're incentivising profit above everything else, then that's the bottom line, realistically. Unless there's an alternative that works, I'm not sure.
The alternative can only be what you said before, which is change that anyway. Yeah. Because if clubs are trying to do the right thing, and everyone should, and you're right about the running from Everton's perspective, but Everton's wages has gone down, Everton's amortisation have gone down, Everton's squad has got the squad they had in 21, player-wise to what it is now, is decimated, which is people go, why are Everton in relegation? And they weren't. We'll go and have a look at what's happening there. So they're moving towards it. But the only way, as like a balance for a league, I think, is to do what.
But I don't know if I've ever explained this. I don't know if you know, there are four different sustainability rules in every league in England. So League Two, League One, Championship, and Premier League. Premier League is 3 years, 105 million. Yeah. Championship, I think you can lose a maximum of 13 million a season. It might be 15, but it's 13 or 15 million a season. That's the Championship rule. Completely different than the Premier League. Yeah. League One, the owners have to put a business plan in at the start of the season, and if there's a shortfall and there's a loss, they have to put a letter of support in to say that they can basically get the money. League Two, so what happens at League Two, because obviously I've been in League Two quite a few years now, unfortunately, so you have to put a business plan in at the start of the season. Let's say we're £2 million, because they look at your revenue from the year before, they look at the commitment that of players that you're going to buy this season, and they say, right, OK, you've got a shortfall, a loss here that's £2 million. We have to put that cash in up front.
Is that why you're looking for new investors?
It doesn't matter, because in League One and Championship, you still have to put the cash in eventually. But in League What Two, you have to put the cash in up front.
Nice, okay.
Right? If you put that cash in, then you go and spend more money on players, they stop you registering a player.
Yeah.
They stop you registering a player because you're breaching the sustainability rules. League Two is the best operated league, in my opinion, in the whole of the Football League system, because it actually prevents owners going spending more money than the cash that they've put in to cover their losses. Mm-hmm. Every other league's got a different set of rules. In League One, they have a different... It's unbelievable. Yeah. So the whole of the football sort of sustainability rules should be similar principles.
Would you do that in the Premier League then? So if it was whatever, you need 200 million for your club to survive this season, you have to be able to...
I went along at the beginning with the owners should be able to spend what they want. Yep. But then I had a session for about two... I wrote a book a couple of years ago, and I had a session with Steve Parrish for about 4 hours in his office. And he, to be fair, made me change my mind. With Andy Holt did some work on it from Accrington. Andy Holt believes that your revenue, you should only ever be able to spend 60% of your revenue on players, and you shouldn't be able to lose money. That clubs should be sustainable. That's what he believes. Yeah. Steve Parrish said that if you allow complete freedom of spending, how do I, Steve Parrish, as a football club, ever compete with Abu Dhabi or Saudi Arabia when they've got trillions of pounds? You talk about states, not billionaires, trillionaires, who could literally just go and do whatever they wanted. So he said, there has to be a cap. Mm. So I bought into that cap idea, and I just came up with that route that if Man United are the best generating revenue club, that clubs can always go up to that level, so at least you can go parity. That was how I got to where I got to a couple of years ago. Right. But it needs changing now. The rules do need changing at Premier League level. Because I agree, you should be able to spend more money if you want to, if you're an Everton or a Newcastle wanting to chase the dream. But on the other hand, you should have to put that cash in, I think, up front.
Yeah, to provide evidence. Yeah.
The problem with that is that when you sign four-year contracts with, say, players, you can only in League Two, the problem is we could lose £2 million this season and put the £2 million cash in, but we could have committed to spend for next season as well. So you're then trying to work out how you do it for next season. So you'd have to forward think about De Bruyne on a five-year deal, Abu Dhabi would have to commit to that 5 years of covering his money, you know what I mean, if it was going to create a loss. So it is complex, this, but that's where... is a regulator going to make any difference to the game? I do believe it would mean that there'd be a greater threat to the system. And to the Premier League, they've proven they can't govern, in my opinion, English football. Now, some will disagree with that. They've proven they can't govern it.
Is that to do with
it's the 20 clubs? The 20 clubs. It's a committee, and the committee, to be fair, you're all on different pages.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, Everton want one thing, United want another, City want another, Arsenal want another.
Are you surprised with the 14 though? The way they haven't kind of tried to level it a little bit, or you're not surprised in the slightest?
Because the problem is, it's not
one of them things.
It's not 14 now though, is it? It's like Newcastle have joined the six, and then there's probably, you know. Doesn't feel like that.
There's a lot of power though for the 14.
No, that's what I mean. But are you?
No, but what I'm saying is, when you actually look at things, I think certainly things I've read that you've got almost feels like the 14 and the 6, and they talk about Newcastle becoming number 7, if you like. But the vote in the Premier League is that 14-6
votes, don't they? The others.
What's that?
Stop! Don't they only need 7 votes to stop anything going?
Yeah, they need one more.
But they can't get it. So a lot of the things that
Newcastle have started to vote, though. I think Newcastle have started to vote with the 6.
It's because everything's like every blooming vote that's happened in the last 12 months has been like Newcastle related, like sponsor related party sponsors and things.
Everyone
like
thinks everyone's against their club, don't they?
Just a non-football question. Who watched the Traitors? Harry, how has it been since you won the Traitors?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's like my feet haven't touched the ground yet, and then I'm getting to do things like this on a Thursday. It's Thursday today, isn't it? I don't even know what day. It's been a mad...
Doesn't go out till next week.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's crazy. There's nothing else I can really say. I've been so lucky to have the flip of life 360 because I love life way more, as much as I did before, but even more because of how different it is.
180, you want the flip. 360 with the...
Oh, same.
One AC, Harry. Harry,
fucking Scousers, honestly. Okay, brilliant. Well, listen, that is the fan debate. We've really enjoyed it. It's our first one back. Make sure you tune in for round two.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.